I sort of forgot to tell Joe that bit of information when he questioned me this morning.
Why wouldn't you tell him? Danielle asked.
To begin with, he never asked me if I was with anyone. I simply answered his questions. Had he asked me if someone was at my house last night, I would have told him.
Come on, Ian, Chris chided. Why didn't you really tell him?
Ian looked up at Chris.
I wanted to talk to my sister first. We are working on an exposé about earthbound spirits, and Morris's murder totally changes the direction of the piece. I thought if Kelly saw something last night, it might give us something to use. I didn't really want to just hand it over to the cops without first checking it out.
It could also help the police find the killer, Danielle reminded him, sounding somewhat annoyed.
Well, she didn't see anything. I talked to her after Lily and I came back to my house.
Where was I? Lily asked.
You were already sound asleep on my bed.
Brian may still want to talk to her, Danielle said.
I know, I already told Kelly she needs to call Henderson and let him know she was here last night.
You mentioned Kelly knew some stuff about Morris. Something she found when researching him? Danielle asked.
Ian shook his head. Not exactly. It's about her college roommate. But hey, you can read about it when I finish the article.
Ian flashed Danielle a grin. Chris knelt by the fireplace in the library, arranging the logs and strategically positioning the kindling. Lily and Ian had just gone out to get something to eat, and the other guests had not yet returned to Marlowe House. Danielle sat on the sofa, Sadie by her feet, watching Chris prepare the fire, while Walt paced the room.
So Morris said nothing? Danielle asked Walt.
He was outside when I saw him again. I was leery to call him inside. I doubt he would have listened to me anyway. He seemed pretty intent on following his body.
I suppose I could go down to the morgue, see if he's still hanging around his body. Maybe he'll tell me who murdered him, Danielle suggested.
That doesn't seem like a good idea, Chris said, still kneeling in front of the fireplace.
The flame began to flicker and expand. He closed the screen and stood up, wiping his palms off on the sides of his pants.
For once, I agree with Chris. Stay away from the morgue, Walt told her.
It's not that I want to go down there, but knowing he was murdered under this roof is a little more than disturbing, Danielle said.
I'll make sure no one sneaks into the house, and I'll keep an eye on your guests, Walt promised. I suppose that means no more dream hopping, Chris said, as he sat down next to Danielle on the sofa.
Walt flashed him a cool look. Perhaps I should consider installing an alarm system, Danielle suggested. I really don't expect Walt to stand guard at night.
Oh, no, we wouldn't want to interrupt your little trips to Hawaii.
Danielle frowned at Chris.
Well, that was rather snarky.
Maybe Chris is jealous, Walt smirked. Perhaps I should do a little hop with him, maybe a little skydiving over a live volcano.
You just stay out of my dreams, Chris snapped.
Or a snake pit, Walt suggested.
Oh, please, Danielle shuddered. Don't mention snake pits, even in jest. That was the worst.
Chris glared at Walt. Don't tell me you took Danielle to a snake pit during a dream hop.
Of course not,
Walt sounded insulted. Please, I don't want to talk about it. But no, it wasn't Walt, Danielle cringed. After a few moments of silence, Walt said,
Something we do need to talk about. The second ghost.
You mentioned you saw him again, Danielle said.
Yes, I'm certain he has something to do with Morris's death. Maybe he's the one who killed Morris and something happened when he tried to get away, Walt suggested.
Like, after Chuck Christensen murdered Bart Haston? Danielle asked. Walt nodded.
Exactly.
Chris turned to Danielle.
That's the one who drove off the cliff?
Yes, at the same place Darlene Gusaroff was murdered, Danielle explained. Chris frowned.
You know, there sure have been a lot of people killed here since you moved to town.
Yeah, so Brian Henderson keeps telling me, Danielle said with a sigh.
Now, is this Darlene Gusaroff the same one from the house I'm buying? The Gusaroff estate? Chris asked.
You're buying the Gusaroff estate? Walt asked. Why would you do that? I thought you just bought a house.
Danielle told Walt about Adam's idea and why it was necessary for Chris to buy a second piece of property.
Wouldn't it be easier for you to just move? Walt suggested.
Like you mentioned, the mortality rate is high around here. You'd probably be happier somewhere else.
Admit it, Walt. You'd be sad to see me go, Chris smiled.
I'd get over it, Walt mumbled.
I want to hear more about this second ghost, Danielle said.
Since he showed up around the same time as Morris, I have to assume they are in some way connected. I asked him if he killed Morris, Walt explained.
What did he say? Danielle asked.
He just gave me some double talk. But what concerned me, he seemed overly interested in you. In Danielle? Why?
Chris turned to Danielle again.
Is it possible you know this spirit, or knew him when he was alive?
I can't think of any man I've ever met with a close connection to Morris, except for Cleve, and he's dead. And Walt knows what he looks like. Plus, I've already encountered his spirit, and I'm certain he's moved on.
What did he say about Danielle? Chris asked.
When I asked him some questions, trying to figure out how he was involved in all this, if he knew anything about Morris's death, he kept asking me about Danielle, and then I told him to stay away from her.
What did he say to that? Chris asked.
He made it clear he didn't intend to leave her alone.
The three sat in silence for a few moments, considering Walt's words. Finally, Danielle asked, "Walt, can you describe what this spirit looks like?" Walt considered the question a moment before answering,
"He appeared to be about Chris's age. He's tall, a few inches taller than Chris, but slender."
"Skinny?" Chris asked.
Walt shook his head.
"No, just slender. He looked fit. Well, that is, had he actually been alive instead of a reflection of his former self. Dark hair, dark eyes. His manner of dress, not casual like yours. More like Adam, yet a better cut of clothes. Tailored. Yes, I'd say his clothing was tailored."
Danielle frowned. "Well-dressed? Dark hair and eyes?"
"Yes,"
Walt nodded. "It's possible, whoever it is, assuming he is connected, was connected to earthbound spirits, simply knows who I am and doesn't know me personally. After all, Morris was intent on recruiting me into the organization. Maybe this was some guy Morris recruited to get close to me, like with Richard."
"That was before he decided to blackmail me," Chris added.
"I don't know." Danielle shook her head.
"Hello, Danielle,"
a male voice said from the far corner of the library. They all heard it. Their heads turned to the direction of the voice. Shadows concealed the person or spirit attached to it. Slowly, Danielle stood, staring into the shadowy corner. He stepped out, revealing himself. Danielle let out a startled gasp. "Lucas!" 14. The moment Danielle uttered Lucas, the apparition vanished. She remained standing, staring into the now empty corner.
"That was him," Walt said. "That's the other spirit who was in the house today."
Chris looked at Danielle.
"What did you call him?"
Frowning, Walt looked from the now empty corner to Danielle.
"You said Lucas. Why did you call him Lucas?"
"That's who it was," Danielle whispered.
"Are you saying the second spirit is the ghost of your dead husband?"
Chris asked incredulously. Danielle nodded.
"Oh, that's impossible. Danielle's husband has been dead over a year now. She never saw him after he died. Why would he show up here now?" Walt asked.
Danielle glanced from Chris to Walt.
He sounded just like Lucas. "It doesn't work that way, Danielle. Once a spirit moves on, he can't just come back," Walt told her.
Turning from the corner, Danielle looked at Walt.
"What about my Christmas dream? Was that nothing more than something you orchestrated? My parents, Cheryl, it was just an ordinary dream?"
"It wasn't an ordinary dream."
Walt's voice softened. His eyes focused on Danielle's face.
"But visiting a dream after a spirit moves on is not the same thing as staying on this plane, as I am, as other spirits are doing, the ones you and Chris see."
"What makes you so certain about that?" Chris asked.
Walt looked from Danielle to Chris.
"What do you mean? How do you know a spirit can't come back after it's moved on?" "It's just something I feel," Walt told him.
"But you don't know for certain," Danielle said.
"As certain as I can be," Walt insisted. "Okay, let's say you're right. Maybe a spirit can't come back after it's moved on. But how do you know Danielle's husband moved on? Maybe he never did. And now he's here."
Chris looked around.
"But where did he go?"
"That doesn't make sense. Danielle didn't see him at his funeral. He never showed up at the house they shared. It sounds to me like he moved on. I think the spirit just looks like her husband."
"It was Lucas." Danielle sat back down on the sofa.
"But where did he go?"
Walt paced the room.
"I want to know what he has to do with Peter Morris's death."
"Maybe he has nothing to do with Morris," Chris suggested. "It could all be a coincidence."
"This is so strange," Danielle muttered. Holding her hands on her lap, she looked down and closed her eyes for a moment before opening them again and looking up.
"Why would he show himself now? And where did he go?"
"Maybe he wants to talk to you alone," Chris suggested.
"Absolutely not," Walt said.
Chris frowned at Walt.
"Why not? And since when have you started monitoring Danielle's paranormal associations?"
"If it is Danielle's husband, he needs to beat it. But I'm not convinced it's him."
Danielle stood up. "Maybe Walt's right. It isn't Lucas. I mean, why would he be here now, after all this time? If he had something to say to me, why didn't he come before?"
"He died in a car accident, didn't he?" Chris asked.
Danielle walked to the corner and looked at where the apparition had been standing. "Yes, right before Christmas."
"Did you ever go to the site of the accident?" Chris asked.
Danielle reached out to where Lucas had been standing just moments ago. There was nothing there. She turned back to Chris.
"Yes. Well, I drove down the street once, but I couldn't get myself to stop the car and get out."
"It's always possible his spirit lingered there," Chris suggested.
"But wouldn't I have seen him when I drove down the street?" Danielle asked.
"Not necessarily. I remember this one spirit. He haunted a movie theater at the beach. People would tell stories of their popcorn flying out of their hands in the middle of the show, or how someone would knock a soda out of their hands, yet no one would be there. I decided to check it out, and sure enough, the theater was being haunted.
"What does this have to do with Danielle's husband?" Walt asked.
It turned out the guy had been murdered in the alley behind the theater. After his death, he ran into the building and never left. He wasn't murdered in the theater, but that's the place he haunted.
"What happened to him?" Danielle asked.
I helped him understand what had happened, and once he realized he was dead and came to grips with his murder, he moved on, Chris explained.
"You're a regular do-gooder," Walt muttered.
Ignoring Walt, Danielle said, "Sometimes that's all it takes for them to move on, to realize they're no longer alive."
Chris looked over at Walt.
"Unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes they hang on and on, like an uninvited house guest."
"If it was Lucas, where did he go? Why is he here?" Danielle asked.
"He might have left you when he saw us here. I think after not seeing you for more than a year, he doesn't want an audience," Chris suggested.
"I'm going to my room." Danielle started for the door. Sadie lifted her head and looked around. She had slept through Lucas's brief appearance and had no idea another spirit other than Walt had just been in the room.
"You shouldn't be alone," Walt said.
He started to follow her. Danielle turned to him. "No, you stay here. I want to know why Lucas is here. And Chris is probably right. I doubt he'll come if either of you are with me."
"Danielle, you don't want to do this," Walt insisted.
"Walt, let her go," Chris told him.
A few moments later, after Danielle had left the room, Walt directed his attention to Chris.
"Why would you encourage this? Don't you think Danielle deserves closure? This could give it to her."
"Closure? Her husband's been dead for over a year now. She's just fine. Let dead husbands lie," Walt said.
"Danielle's not just fine. Don't you think it's been eating at her, not having a chance to confront her husband? She probably feels guilty for being angry with him. She has no reason to feel guilty." "I know that, but he left her in limbo. And then when she starts dating again, it's with Joe Morelli and..."
"Morelli was all wrong for Danielle." "I don't disagree. Both men basically betrayed her. Her husband by having an affair and Morelli by not believing in her when she needed his support."
"What's your point?"
"Unless he works this out, she's never going to feel confident enough to trust a man again."
"Danielle trusts me," Walt snapped.
"I'm speaking about a living, breathing man."
Walt lifted his brows.
"You?"
"I understand Danielle in a way Morelli never could."
"I understand her too," Walt insisted.
"I hate to be the one to point this out, but you're a ghost, Walt."
"I loathe that term."
Walt turned from Chris and walked to the window. He stared out at the side yard.
"Don't you want Danielle to fall in love someday with a man she can marry? Have children with?"
Walt gazed out the window, his back to Chris.
"Danielle's always telling me things have changed since I was alive, that a woman doesn't need marriage and children to be fulfilled.
You don't have to necessarily need something to want it."
"You think she wants that?" Walt asked.
"She might if she found a man she could trust."
"Do you think you're that man? Are you saying you want to marry Danielle?"
"I haven't known Danielle that long, but I'd like to get to know her better. I've never really considered getting married before."
Chris sat on the sofa. Sadie stood up and rested her chin on his knee, while Chris absently stroked her ears.
You say you want to get to know her better, but you never considered getting married. Are you saying your intentions are to enter into some casual relationship with her, no different from the current Valentine's Day guests? Use her, and then what?
Settle down, Walt. I know we have this generation thing going on, but really, get off your soapbox.
Generation thing? I happen to be younger than you.
Just because I happen to be older than you were when you died does not mean I'm older than you now. Anyway, I was referring to the era you lived in. And when I said I never considered marriage before, what I actually meant, I never imagined I could date a woman and feel confident she wasn't with me for my money. I don't worry about that with Danielle.
You want to marry Danielle because she has money and isn't particularly interested in yours.
That's not what I meant. I'm interested in Danielle because of who she is. But when I say I'm interested in her, I mean I want to get to know her better, go out with her. And someday, if things did progress with us, I could see her as someone I could consider marrying. I wouldn't be afraid she wanted me for my money. And you have to admit, we've a lot in common.
What? That you both see ghosts?
I thought you loathed that term.
Only when someone applies it to me.
I think it gives us something unique in common, something we can't share with anyone else. Danielle discusses her abilities with Lily and with Chief MacDonald.
Yes,
but not in the same way she can with me. Lily or MacDonald will never really truly understand all that Danielle's had to deal with because of this thing we share.
I wonder, if you were unable to see spirits, how would you react to Danielle? In the same way Joe Morelli did?
I suppose I could say the same about Danielle. But the fact is, for both of us, our ability to see and communicate with spirits has shaped us into who we are, what we've become.
What happens if you and Danielle get closer and then you decide she's not the one? Maybe you fall in love with someone else.
Walt, there's no guarantees in life. Have you really been dead for so long that you don't remember what it was like to want to get to know a woman better?
Those types of feelings don't necessarily die with your body, Walt said, his voice almost a whisper.
I want to get to know Danielle better. I understand there's no guarantee either of us will want more than friendship after we do. Yet there is one thing I am fairly certain about. As long as she carries around the baggage of her marriage, I don't see anyone getting too close to her. And as long as you...
When Chris failed to finish his sentence, Walt asked,
"As long as I what?" I know Joe Morelli is still interested in Danielle. Considering they've a brief history, I imagine some might see him as my competition. But I don't.
But the same can't be said about you.
Are you saying you see me as competition?
I see how you look at her, Walt.
Chris, I'm not a fool. I know there's no future for Danielle and me. I won't interfere if something develops between you two. I didn't interfere when she went out with Morelli. But don't expect me to simply move on. I'm staying here.
Walt vanished. Sadie jumped up and let out a bark. She looked around and then raced from the library. Chris could hear the golden retriever running up the stairs. He guessed the dog was headed for the attic, where she would probably find Walt.
"Where is Bella?" Walt asked Max when he got to the attic.
Max let out a high-pitched meow.
"Sleeping where?"
Max yawned.
"As long as you didn't do something to her."
Max rolled over on his side.
"Yes, the police are finally gone. I just wish I was downstairs last night when Morris was here."
Max meowed.
Morris is the man who was killed. The body the police took out of here.
Just as Sadie raced into the attic, Walt asked Max,
"What do you mean you saw Arlene go downstairs around the time Morris was killed?"
15. Outside, tree limbs swayed in the afternoon breeze, scraping against the exterior of Marlowe House in a steady and repetitive rhythm. Danielle sat silently on the edge of her mattress, her back straight and hands folded in her lap. She listened to the tree limbs hitting the house as she waited. 20 minutes had passed since she had come upstairs, and still he had not shown himself again. Danielle stood up and walked to the window. She wondered briefly if it was going to rain again. Looking outside, she spied David Hilton's car pull up in front of the house. Turning from the window, she headed for her bedroom door. When Danielle reached the first floor, she greeted David and Arlene, who had just let themselves into the house. Guests of Marlowe House were given both a key to their room and to the front door. The locksmith made periodic visits to Marlowe House to rekey the door. With Morris's murder, Danielle was anxious to call the locksmith, although she suspected the killer had entered through an unlocked door. Arlene stood outside the parlor, peeking in. "I don't know how you can ever go into that room again." "I'll feel much better when the police catch the killer." Danielle closed the parlor door. She stood with Arlene and David in the entry hall. Turning away from the now closed door, Arlene faced Danielle. "Do they have any leads?" "I believe they found something that might help them."
"What was that?" David asked.
"They didn't tell me exactly," Danielle lied. "I can't imagine what that could be," Arlene said. "We were all in the house when the police arrived, and I sure didn't see anything, aside from Chris standing over the body."
"Chris had no reason to kill Peter Morris," Danielle insisted.
"Well, I certainly hope you're right, since he's staying here."
"Actually, I'm moving out tonight."
Arlene startled from Chris's sudden appearance. He walked toward them from the direction of the library.
"Tonight? Why?" Danielle asked.
"The house will be officially mine by the end of the day. I have the key. It's fully furnished. So all I need to do is toss a set of sheets in the washing machine, and I'll be set."
"Chris, none of us got any sleep last night. Why don't you plan on moving in the morning after you've had some rest?" Danielle suggested.
"Don't rush out on our account," David told him. "Arlene really didn't mean anything. We know you didn't have anything to do with that man's death. If the police thought you were involved some way, I don't believe they would have let you go already."
"Thanks, David. I appreciate that."
Chris flashed him a smile and glanced over to Arlene, who looked sheepishly to the floor.
"I want you to know, David," Danielle began. "I realize this is not the Valentine's Day weekend you two planned. Not by a long shot. And if you want to leave early, I'll refund your money, even for last night."
"I appreciate the offer," David told her. "But Arlene and I already discussed this, and we decided to stay."
Their conversation was interrupted when the doorbell rang. Danielle answered the door. It was Adam Nichols.
"I hope you don't mind. I dropped by without calling. I wanted to see Chris."
Adam peeked over her shoulder and saw Chris standing in the hallway. He noticed another couple standing near him, but couldn't see their faces.
"Sure, come in."
Danielle stepped aside and opened the door wider. The moment Adam stepped through the doorway, Arlene turned and looked in his direction. He paused a moment, his dark eyes wide in surprise as he glanced from Arlene to the man by her side.
"Arlene?"
So this is her boyfriend, Adam thought. He'd caught a brief glimpse of the man at the restaurant, but not a clear view of his face. He was rather ordinary-looking and slightly overweight. He was obviously older than Arlene, but Adam didn't think by more than a few years. Adam surmised the man's thinning hair and extra weight added several years to his appearance. "Adam," Arlene stammered. She immediately reached out to David and took his hand.
"You know each other?" Danielle asked as she closed the door.
"We had some mutual acquaintances," Adam explained. "It's nice seeing you again, Arlene."
"You too."
Arlene squeezed David's hand.
"Are you staying here?" Adam asked.
"Yes, yes, we are. Adam, this is David, my boyfriend. David, this is Adam Nichols."
With a frown, Adam looked from Danielle to Arlene.
"Were you here last night when Peter Morris was murdered?"
"You know about that?" Arlene asked.
"Yes. Strange you didn't mention it," Adam said.
"Mention it?" Danielle asked.
"Arlene and I bumped into each other this morning before breakfast."
"I just figured we weren't supposed to discuss the case," Arlene explained, flashing Adam a pleading expression.
"Well, it's nice seeing you again. Nice to meet you, David." "If you'll excuse us, we're going to head up to our room," David explained. "We didn't get much sleep last night, and I'm exhausted."
After Danielle led Adam and Chris into the library a few minutes later, she closed the door behind her and turned to Adam.
"Okay, what is the deal with you and Arlene?" Danielle asked.
"What do you mean?" Adam asked.
"Come on, Adam. The looks you two are giving each other, there has to be some story there."
"Danielle, you're sounding an awful lot like Lily right now," Chris chided.
"Why? Because Lily tends to ask what everyone is thinking?"
"It really is nothing," Adam insisted. "I was just surprised to see her staying here, that's all. I knew her back when I was going out with Isabella."
Danielle paused a moment, considering Adam's statement. Cocking her head to one side, she asked,
"Was she a member of Earthbound Spirits?"
"Why would you think that?" Adam asked.
"You said it was when you were dating Isabella."
"No, she was not a member. Arlene would be the last person in the world to hook up with an organization like Earthbound Spirits." "Why do you say that?" Chris asked.
"She just wouldn't do it, that's all." "So what do you know about the guy she's with? What's he like?"
"Aha, so there is something between you," Danielle teased.
"Don't mind her," Chris said with a laugh. "She's sleep-deprived and doesn't realize how she sounds."
Danielle scowled.
"How do I sound?"
"Nosy," Adam and Chris said at the same time. Danielle waved her hand dismissively, went to the sofa, and sat down. In all fairness, Adam was the one asking questions about the boyfriend. Adam walked over to the sofa and sat down in a chair facing Danielle.
"And? You haven't told me anything about him yet."
Danielle started to say something and then paused, looking quizzically at Adam.
"Why are you here, anyway?"
"To see Chris, remember?"
"I suppose I should leave and let you talk to him before you two start accusing me of being nosy again."
Danielle started to stand up.
"Oh, sit down," Adam scoffed.
Danielle sat back down and smiled. "I found out something interesting about her boyfriend from Chief McDonald." She looked at Chris.
"I haven't even told you yet."
"What's that?" Chris said.
"You know his last name is Helton. I guess his grandmother was Helen Helton."
"Helen Helton?" Adam said in surprise.
Danielle looked at Adam.
"You know her?"
"If it's the same Helen Helton who left her estate to Earthbound Spirits, then yeah, I know who she is. The lawsuit was big news back then. Family lost. Morris won.
Apparently, David is the youngest grandson.
Doesn't that make him a prime suspect? Chris asked.
That lawsuit was a number of years ago, Danielle explained. You were here last night. David was in his room when you found the body.
Whoever killed Morris had to have gotten some blood on them, considering the number they did on Morris.
As far as I know, the cops didn't find any bloody clothes. If they had, I don't believe they would have let David leave. I think it's just a bizarre coincidence. If he had the patience to wait that long to kill the man, I'd assume he wouldn't plan to murder him under the same roof where he was staying.
This morning, he never mentioned the connection to Morris, Chris noted.
No, and apparently he didn't offer the information to the cops when they interviewed him. The chief told me he ran background checks on the guests, and that's what they came up with.
How did he explain that to the cops? Chris asked.
I have no idea. What did they find out about Arlene? Adam asked.
Arlene? Danielle shrugged. The chief didn't mention anything, aside from the fact she's David's girlfriend.
Not sure how I feel about him staying here now, Chris said.
Why? You think David's dangerous? Danielle asked.
He's the only one staying at Marlowe House with a real motive to kill Morris.
If he came here to kill Morris, I'd assume he would have taken my offer to leave early. After all, no one would have thought anything suspicious about them leaving, under the circumstances.
Why stay longer if he came here to kill Morris?
You certainly seem calm about all this, Chris noted.
Danielle shrugged.
I just don't feel him being here has anything to do with Morris's death.
The three were silent for a few moments, then Chris let out a sigh and looked at Adam.
So, what did you need to talk to me about? Everything okay with the house?
Adam picked up the manila folder from his lap and opened it.
I called the title company right before I came over here, and the house is officially yours. But that's not why I'm here. I brought over a purchase contract for the Gusaroff estate for you to look over if you decide to make an offer. I assume you'd want to look at the property first. I've driven by it, and I think it would work.
Chris put his hand out to Adam. Standing up briefly, Adam handed Chris the contract.
But don't you want to look at it? Adam asked.
Not particularly. It's not as if I intend to live in it. And from what Danielle tells me about the property, I believe it'll be perfect for what I need.
Chris walked over to the desk and sat down with the purchase contract, reading it over. Adam smiled over at Danielle.
You know, if you ever decide to close up the bed and breakfast, I think we'd make a great real estate team.
Adam was just about to climb into his car when he heard a woman call out,
"Adam, wait!"
He looked up to see Arlene running toward him from the direction of Marlowe House's front entry.
"Arlene."
Adam stood on the sidewalk next to his car.
"I wanted to talk to you before you left. Alone."
"Yeah, I imagine you do."
"What did you tell them?"
"You mean Danielle and Chris?"
Arlene nodded.
"I didn't tell them anything, aside from the fact we used to know each other."
Arlene sighed in relief.
"But they do know who your boyfriend is. Is he really your boyfriend?"
"What do you mean?"
"Oh, come on, Arlene. Helen Hilton's grandson? Really? What are the chances of you two getting together?"
"Maybe we just have a lot in common."
"Yeah, I bet you do. But you need to know the cops have done a background check on both of you. They know David is Helen Hilton's grandson, and if they figure out your connection to Earthbound Spirits, I have a feeling you'll be pushed up to the top of the suspect list."
"I didn't kill Peter Morris."
"Frankly, I don't care who killed that SOB. They did the world a service. But I'd hate to see you go to jail over that dirtbag."
I didn't kill him. I promise.
Please, be careful, Arlene.
Are you going to tell anyone?
Adam looked into Arlene's pleading eyes. He studied her a moment, and then finally shook his head.
No.
16. Leaning back in his desk chair, cell phone in hand, Police Chief McDonald read Danielle's text message.
No news.
With a disgruntled sigh, he tossed the phone onto his desk. He had hoped when Danielle returned to Marlowe House, Walt would tell her the identity of the killer. Or perhaps she would run into the ghost of Peter Morris. But so far, having someone on his side who could communicate with spirits wasn't giving him an edge in this investigation. A knock came at his office door. Looking up, he watched as one of his officers peeked in.
Carla, the waitress from Pure Cafe, insists on seeing you. Says it has something to do with Morris's murder, he told McDonald. Show her in.
A few minutes later, Carla sat in a chair facing the chief. They were alone in his office, the door closed.
Was Peter Morris really murdered at Marlowe House? She asked.
Yes. Now, what did you want to tell me?
I heard on the radio that he'd been murdered after midnight at Marlowe House. I just knew I had to come talk to you. I think I saw the killer running away from the house last night.
You were by Marlowe House last night?
Carla nodded. I drive right by there every day for work. When I was coming home last night, I saw someone running away from Marlowe House. I almost hit her.
Her?
Carla nodded again.
Yes, I'm sure it was a woman. She looked right into my headlights. But she was wearing one of those hoodies, you know, like those gang kids wear.
Hoodies? Are you talking about a hoodie sweatshirt?
Well, I guess it was actually a coat, but it had a hood, and she had it pulled up over her head. Real suspicious-like. Of course, at the time, I had no idea she had just killed someone.
You say she looked into your headlights?
Yes, when I almost hit her. I had to slam on the brakes. I'm so afraid.
Why are you afraid?
Now I know she killed someone. And she saw my car. She might track me down and kill me, too. After all, I'm a witness.
If she looked into the headlights, you must have seen her face.
Carla shook her head.
It happened so fast. I just know it was a woman. Or I suppose it might have been a man. A very slender man. Maybe a boy?
The chief pressed the heel of his hand against his forehead. He could feel a headache coming on.
Let's slow down a bit, Carla. Do you know what time this was?
Sometime between midnight and one. I can't be sure exactly.
Don't you know what time you left work? It's only a few minutes from Pure Cafe to Marlowe House. What time did you get off work?
Last night I got off work at 11:30, but I didn't go right home. I ran into someone in the parking lot, and we started talking. Time just sort of got away from us.
You were having a conversation in the dark parking lot in the middle of the night, with the weather we've been having?
Carla scooted down in her chair.
I wasn't exactly standing in the parking lot. I was sitting in his car.
Whose car?
He said his name was Martin Smith, but I don't think it was.
You don't know the name of the man whose car you were sitting in during the middle of the night?
He said he was staying at the Seahorse Motel, but when I went over there this morning, they had no Martin Smith registered.
Why were you talking in his car?
Oh, come on, Chief. I came here to help you. You know Martin and I weren't actually talking. He's a cute guy. We were having fun. And when it got a little out of hand, I told him I had to go. But I didn't check the time.
The chief lifted his brows.
But you went to the motel to find him this morning.
Carla shrugged. Like I said, he was real cute. Shaking his head and putting aside images of Carla and a strange man rolling around in the backseat of a car like two teenagers, he asked,
"So, tell me about this person you almost ran over."
I was driving down the street and this dark shadow seemed to jump out in front of me from the direction of Marlowe House. This person just appeared in my headlights, and I slammed on my brakes. It was like she didn't realize a car was coming. She looked up at me and then kept running.
Did this woman get into a car?
Like I said, I'm pretty sure it was a woman, but I suppose it could have been a man or maybe a teenage boy.
Did this person get into a car? Did you see where she or he went?
That's the funny thing. Carla leaned forward, lowering her voice. I was so shook up. I watched to see where she went, ran right over to the house across the street and climbed into a car parked in the driveway and drove off.
House across the street?
Yes, the one Ian Bartley rents. But I know it wasn't Ian. I would have recognized him. Although now that I think about it, it looked a little like Ian.
It was Ian?
Carla shook her head. No, it definitely was not Ian, but it looked a little like him. After the chief finished with Carla, he phoned Ian. According to Ian, he and Lily were just heading back to Marlowe House, but he agreed to stop at the station first.
What's this about, chief?
Ian asked when he was led into the interrogation room and Lily was asked to wait in the front lobby. The chief motioned to one of the empty chairs at the table before closing the door. The two men sat down.
Joe talked to you this morning when you came to pick up Lily?
Yes.
Ian watched the chief pick up a file from the table and open it. Glancing over the contents of the file folder, the chief looked up at Ian and asked,
"You told Joe you went to bed around midnight last night. That sounds about right. Can you tell me what cars were parked in your driveway from, let's say, about 30 minutes before you went to bed until this morning when you woke up?"
"What cars?"
Ian frowned.
"From what I remember about your driveway, you have enough room to park maybe two cars there?"
"Yes."
"So tell me, what car or cars were parked in your driveway last night?"
Ian let out a sigh.
"My car and Kelly's." "Kelly, your sister?"
"Yes."
"You didn't say anything to Joe about Kelly being in Frederickport?"
"She's not. She went home last night."
"Last night? When?"
Ian shrugged.
"It was around midnight." "Why didn't you tell Joe?"
"I answered Joe's questions. He didn't ask me if there was anyone at my house."
The chief slammed the folder shut, his hand hitting the tabletop with a loud slap.
"What are you hiding, Ian?"
"I'm not hiding anything."
"Don't give me that. Don't try playing stupid. It doesn't suit you. Why did you withhold information regarding your sister being in Frederickport?" "Joe asked if you'd seen anything last night." "I don't believe for an instant you wouldn't realize Joe would want to question your sister about what she saw when leaving your house."
Ian leaned forward, resting his elbows on the table.
"Kelly's been working with me on my current project. It's an expose on earthbound spirits and Peter Morris. Obviously, Morris's death changes the direction of our article. I confess I wanted to talk to Kelly before you did. I wanted to see if she saw anything."
"I assume you've spoken to her?"
"Yes, I called when Lily and I got back to my house. Kelly told me she didn't see anything unusual last night." "And you didn't realize we'd still want to interview her?" McDonald snapped. "Yes, of course. I told Kelly to call Henderson. I understood he was taking the lead on this case." "She hasn't called."
Ian shrugged.
"I assumed she would have called right away. But I guess she figured since she didn't see anything, there was no rush." "Did Kelly go back to Portland?" "No, she went to Astoria to stay with some friends." "Ian, something has come up, and I need to talk to her as soon as possible. Can you get her to come back to Frederickport?"
"You mean today?"
"Yes. I'd rather not have to send someone to Astoria to pick her up and bring her back here."
"You're serious, aren't you?"
"Very."
McDonald was alone in his office an hour later when his cell phone began to ring. It was Danielle.
"What's this about you ordering Kelly back to Frederickport?" Danielle asked McDonald the moment he answered her call.
"Why didn't you tell me she was in town last night?" he asked.
"I didn't know. Ian mentioned it after we left the police station, but he told me Kelly would be calling you."
"He told me he didn't tell Joe about Kelly being here because he wanted to talk to her first, in case she saw something he might use in his article," the chief explained.
"Yeah, that's pretty much what he told me. I really don't think it's any big deal. I know you're probably irritated, which I assume is why you told him to have her come back to town. But I think you could have probably just talked to her on the phone. She told Ian she didn't see anything."
"I know Ian's a good friend of yours, Danielle."
"He's your friend too, Chief," she reminded him.
"I know, but this is a murder investigation. I can't let personal feelings hinder the investigation."
"Will Brian be interviewing Kelly?"
"I sent him home to get some sleep."
"Is Joe still there?" Danielle asked.
"I think so. Why? You want to talk to him?"
Danielle sighed. "No, I was just curious. He's the one who initially questioned Ian. Just wondered what he thought about Kelly being here."
"I spoke to him. Actually, he blamed himself. Said Ian did answer his questions. Joe just didn't ask the right ones."
"It's really pretty typical of Ian. He's always close-mouthed about whatever he happens to be working on."
"I hope that's all it is," McDonald muttered.
"What did you say?"
"Oh, nothing," he lied. "But I was wondering, have you figured out who that second spirit might be?"
"I think so. Saw him once. He hasn't shown himself again. But I don't think it has anything to do with Morris's murder. It's just a coincidence, a second spirit showing up at this time."
"How can you be so sure?" he asked.
"Because it's Lucas."
"Lucas?" he asked.
"My late husband." He didn't respond immediately. Finally, he said,
"I didn't think you'd ever seen his spirit before."
"I haven't. I need to figure out why he's here. It would be nice to solve at least one of today's mysteries. Have you learned who that bloody fingerprint belongs to?"
"I really shouldn't have mentioned that to you," McDonald grumbled.
"Do you know who it belongs to?"
"Yes."
"Well, who? Is it someone I know?"
"I'm sorry, I can't tell you that. Not at this time."
Danielle groaned. "I can't believe you aren't telling me." 17. Steam escaped the tea kettle just before it began to hiss and whistle. Alone in the kitchen, Danielle lifted the kettle from the stove and filled her teacup. Just as she walked to the table with her cup of hot green tea, Walt appeared.
"I wanted to talk to you, but someone always seems to be around. Where did Lily take off to again?" he asked.
Instead of taking a sip of tea, Danielle set the cup back on its saucer. She and Ian went back to his house. When they were out, they stopped by the police station.
"Why?"
"The chief found out Kelly was at Ian's last night. He wants to interview Kelly since she left around the time the murder may have occurred. The chief was annoyed Ian failed to share that bit of information with Joe.
Did she see anything?
Walt sat down. Picking up the cup again, Danielle gently blew on the tea. According to Ian, she didn't. But I guess sometimes we see things we aren't even aware of. She sipped the tea.
Have you seen Lucas again?
No. I waited in my room for a while, but nothing. Then I came back downstairs. Adam stopped over with a purchase contract for Chris. I guess he's putting in an offer for the Gusarov estate. Danielle lifted the tea bag from the cup, gently jiggling off any liquid before setting it on the saucer. Walt noticed Danielle had changed her clothes and fixed her hair. Instead of her normal fishtail braid, she had pulled her dark hair back into a high ponytail. No longer wearing sweatpants, she had slipped into a pair of blue jeans. While she looked vastly improved from this morning, Walt couldn't accuse her of dressing up for a potential meeting with her deceased husband. "What are you staring at?" Danielle asked with a frown.
"Oh, nothing. I was just thinking how you look rather young with your hair like that."
"I'll take that as a compliment." Danielle sipped her tea.
"I think you need to have the chief take a closer look at Arlene."
"Arlene? Why?"
"According to Max, she came downstairs last night after Heather went up to bed, which would have been about the time Morris was still here and Chris was in the kitchen looking for you."
"Hmm. She didn't say anything, and Chris didn't mention seeing her downstairs."
"From what he told me, it was dark when he came back down the hall after looking for you. Arlene could have easily been downstairs, even in the parlor with Morris."
"With the lights off?" Danielle asked.
"If Morris was already dead, she might not have felt she needed a light."
"There's still that issue of blood evidence. I don't see how someone could have cut his throat like that and not have gotten blood all over them. And do you honestly believe a woman Arlene's size could have slit his throat like that? Maybe he wasn't a young man, but he wasn't small or frail."
"The coroner had an interesting theory," Walt told her.
"Coroner?"
"I'm not sure it was the coroner exactly, but one of the people in that group this morning."
"You were listening in?"
"Of course I was."
"That's probably why the chief told me about that fingerprint," Danielle muttered.
"You mean the one they found outside?"
Danielle nodded. "He probably figured you would hear what was going on and tell me, so keeping that bit of information from me served no purpose. Of course, if he tells me these things, then it appears we're working together, and I'll share what I find with him."
"Are you saying you aren't working together?"
"No, but I spoke to him on the phone not long ago, and he knows who the fingerprint belongs to, but he's not willing to tell me at this time."
"I suppose I can understand. This is an ongoing investigation."
"Why do you suddenly sound like Brian and Joe?"
"Probably because I spent the morning with their co-workers," Walt suggested.
Danielle let out a grunt, then asked, "So tell me, what's the coroner's theory?"
"Morris was sitting down at the time of the attack. There didn't appear to be a struggle in the room. It's as if someone came up from behind him, surprised him, and slit his throat before he knew what happened."
Danielle cringed. "That's gruesome."
"The sight this morning was gruesome."
"True." Danielle set her cup back on its saucer and pondered the possibilities. That would mean whoever killed Morris was probably someone he knew, someone he was talking with in the parlor. If the killer took the fishing knife out of Chris's tackle box on the back porch, then that would have to indicate this was premeditated. According to Chris, that knife had been missing a few days, before Arlene and David even arrived.
"I still think you need to tell the chief," Walt told her.
"I suppose you're right." Danielle glanced up to the ceiling. "I certainly hope our current guests had nothing to do with Morris's murder." Walt stood up.
If you will excuse me, I think I'll do a little eavesdropping.
I assume you mean on David and Arlene.
Yes.
While I generally don't condone listening into our guests' private conversations, I suppose that...